Hello and welcome again to Oscar Mike Radio. My name is Travis, Marine Corps veteran and your host. Oscar Mike Radio is co-produced with Sense to One Productions. What's your podcast doing? I want to thank my sponsors, Joyce Asak of Asak Real Estate, Echo 6 Ranch, thank you Danielle Rocco, and my supporters, Kason Shaving Company, Exceptional Parent Magazine, and Fight Camp, be your strongest combination as we count down to number 500. I've got a special kind of show this episode, this conversation. My next guest is not a veteran, but has been very involved with the military and veterans on several levels. Very interesting story that applies to a lot of us here as she has transitioned with her life several different ways, professionally and personally. I want to welcome Yadi Caro to Oscar Mike Radio. Yadi, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Travis, for inviting me here. I'm honored to be one of your guests.
Well, we connected over LinkedIn, and I was really taken in with this work you've done within the area of communication and communication with people in the military all the way up to the Pentagon. And I'm like, well, okay, I got to figure out more because, you know, we have a saying in the Marine Corps, Yadi, that comms is everywhere. You don't go very far if you can't talk to people. So, but also, you know, I'm like, shouldn't humanity have communication figured out by now with all the stuff we have? And it seems like from watching some of your work and understanding where you've come from with some of the books you've authored, that there's still work to do. So we'll get into all that, and all that is good stuff. But before we do that, kind of tell us a little bit about who Yadi is and how you got here.
Well, as you can sense from my accent, I'm from Puerto Rico. So I was born and raised in Puerto Rico, in a small town on the west side of the island. And I moved from Puerto Rico when I was about 21 to pursue my master's in communications in Miami. And I started there, moved to Tampa, then to work as a journalist. So my first career was in journalism because I really enjoyed mostly that part of telling the stories of other people and giving information to other people. And a few years later, I transitioned into, a friend recruited me, let's say, to work in this the Department of Defense because there was specific projects that related to communications and security affairs and magazines. So I have never thought about really working or even joining the military, because even though I have a lot of relatives that have been in the military, I didn't imagine that's the way I would end up in through my career. So once I started there working over here in Tampa, I found that the world really fascinating. I was very fascinated by the military world and the discipline, because I'm a very disciplined person. So I'm like, yes, I found my people. So it was the aspect of the professionalism that I always saw with military, and also the kind of adaptability, the willing to get things done and thinking always of the mission. So I've always admired that. And once I started in working in Tampa, my transition from the communications area, I started working more into the tech world, meaning that I will work with teams of engineers or developers to help them get things done, to help them either launch new products or applications, and also be on the customer service side to kind of promote those applications that we were using. So I traveled through Latin America because I worked in the Southern Command, and it was a great opportunity to meet the partners over in the region, the military partners as well. So that was a very fascinating work too. And I worked in pretty much a lot of the different combatant commands, like SOTCOM, European Command, Special Operations Command, Special Operations Europe, and CENTCOM, Central Command right here. So I work with different organizations throughout my career in similar roles, meaning that I will be either customer-facing person, helping them, brilliant people of engineers and developers, and either civilian or military, to help get stuff done, meaning that help them with the productivity, coaching the teams to work better together. And I've learned so much during this time, and I've been doing that for about almost 18 years now, working with different teams. So I've enjoyed the journey so far. And during that time, while I was in Europe in COVID, I launched my podcast, which was Hardcore Soft Skills, because I wanted to be able to explore what is it that really makes teams work together, the brilliant people that you could have the most technically savvy folks, but if there were barriers in communications or barriers in terms of unable to work together effectively, make decisions, those the so-called soft skills, those were really important to develop. So I started that journey, and since then I have pursue organizational psychology in Harvard, and also launched the kind of the company, the educational services, to be able to provide workshops to teams in terms of how to improve the way they collaborate.
Well, it's interesting. Let's just start with the team aspect because, I work in technology and seeing where you have, a squad, a team of really like higher echelon people. These people are true peers in their field, but they can't stand each other. They can't work together. Or, one says tomato, one says tomato, and everything comes to a stop. And it seems like what happens is you spend more time trying to get the team to move forward than actually doing the work. On the other side of the coin, I'm going to ask if you've seen this, where you have a team that, they're not all top performers, if you will. They're not all experts, but they all get the vision, they all get the mission, and one way or another, it's going to get done. And I'm curious, why that happens, Yadi.
Yes, so research shows that the ingredients that make teams work together are based on having a common mission in order that all the team members know what are their particular roles. They are clear on the mission that they have to do. And this has been work being done. There's a Harvard researcher called Richard Hackman that did a lot of work on that and invest in working with intelligence teams in the military. And he found that because he wanted to know what is it that makes those teams work. So having a mission in common, having a kind of a team agreement in place too, like meaning that the understanding of how we're going to work together, establishing the roles like this, the roles are very clear for all the folks involved in that team. They also have the ability to learn this mindset of continually learning from each other. So coaching is always very important for those teams. And that was proven very recently, I think about a decade ago, that Google as well did a research on that, investigating which teams that the technical teams that they had, what is it that makes the best teams? And it wasn't the fact that they had the best engineers or developers. It was that they were able to have a mission, a common a team agreement, and also psychological safety. The ability that I know it sounds soft, like working in the military, I was talking with a former manager of mine, and he was like, don't use that term, psychological safety. It just sounds so soft. But it's basically the ability for teams to trust each other, to tell each other the truth in a respectful manner, but that they feel comfortable to dissent with each other. So ingredients like that no matter what people that you have in your team, you have the clarity, you have the common mission, and you also have the ability, the trust to really be able to give feedback and be able to share ideas are key ingredients that make good teams.
Well, I was going to ask you, you're talking about psychological safe space, but it sounds like respect at the core. If we're working together and I respect you to take some coaching from you, and I can be very candid in my feedback to you, we know we're going to get the job done. Things can happen. So, but it's not the same. Is respect the same as psychological safe spaces, or what's the difference between the two, please?
So you could have a respectful work environment where everybody is cordial with each other, that you respect the other people's opinion, but particularly in the military where you have different ranks and you have the general, and he says or she says, oh, I want to hear from you in terms of your honest opinion. Then kind of you could feel the air that everybody's going to be like, I'm not going to be the one talking because it could be quite dangerous or I could get in trouble if I say that. But so it's a respectful environment. But if there's really psychological safety means that the personnel, the leadership, or just the work culture, it is understanding that there's not going to be like retaliation or the feeling of retaliation when you express your opinion. So in that scenario where the general comes in and asks for the opinion, somebody who's a major or other could come in and talk to and express, well, sir, this is what's going on, and this is what do we think it's the best approach. And knowing that the general is not just going to go back and reject what the person says, they could listen, they could disagree, but also they could be like, I see your point, and there's more curiosity driven there to understand where the other person comes from. So yes, there could be a respectful environment. There needs to be respect for psychological safety, but when it comes to a respectful environment, there's not always psychological safety there.
Let me take a little detour because I want to ask you something. How does what you do or what would how would it apply to parenting?
To parenting?
Yeah,
Or, oh,
because it,
yeah.
well, I mean, I'm a father. I have three sons. They're older now, but I'm like, you know, if I could have gotten all three of my sons to move, that was a challenge. And sometimes I failed to communicate what needed to get done. Right, I didn't do a good job as I could have. Is what you do, could it apply to parenting?
Absolutely. And
Really?
I apply it with my or try to with my 12-year-old and my 8-year-old now, because
Oh,
it's
wow.
not easy. And that's something that actually in like family therapy, they would, and if you read parenting books, that they specify, for example, that it's not perhaps of the way we grew up, that it's like the father says something and it's like, no, because I said so. And you just don't argue because you could get in trouble. But when it comes to kids, for example, I have a kid who has a ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and he's very tends to be a little bit defiant. The best approach that we have found is that it's better to be able to, if he says something, or like we try to not just kind of explain things better and try to listen to like his opinion instead of like, okay, I don't want to do this. Well, explain to me why do you want to do this? But also kind of being affirming and authoritative at the same time of like, okay, I hear you, yet here's the rationale. It's just the ability to make others feel heard, basically, that it's not an aspect of you as a leader, you're gonna everybody should follow what you're saying. It's the understanding that there's some curiosity involved from either a parent's end or the leader end, that they really do want to hear your opinion, and they also may consider it, but at the same time, somebody needs to have the last word. In this case, of course, the parent, and in this case, the leader, because they have it's some responsibility, accountability for the results as well. So I think it definitely applies.
So to get back on track, you've worked primarily in the military space, several different parts of the globe. So, you know, we're a lot of times Americans are in these different foreign locations, but there's also, you know, foreign entities they're working with. How do you cross the international, you know, cultural barrier to be effective in communication as well?
Well, in general, because when it comes to general communication with different people, it's just the same elements apply in general, that the aspect of the being curious about the other, being able to listen effectively to the other, and also having some empathy. So those elements of the communication always apply when it comes to understanding, for example, the body language or what things to really mean, or like if the person says yes, it means no. So those are things, so those are nuances in communication, but it is very important to just maintain that respect in the communication, meaning that being able to be curious, listening effectively, and having coming from a standpoint of respect overall, that they're just simply universal. Now, of course, there's different styles in communication. I've talked to, look, as I'm me being from Puerto Rico, I know that there's different ways that we communicate more expressively, or kind of like we're screaming perhaps, but we're having a nice conversation. Or with others as well, in the sense that they could be not necessarily too open to express, you know, their opinion to you. Like if you're in a meeting, perhaps other people may not be wanting to speak up right away, but then you create the space for them to collaborate outside of the meeting and then bring their opinions into the meeting. So those are just simple considerations that we need to take from a cultural landscape. But the principles in terms of the curiosity, respect, and establishing those connection with people certainly always apply.
So we're more alike than we think sometimes.
Absolutely, yes.
So hypothetically, or we'll play a little game here. I have a company and I am getting frustrated that, I have what I consider a good team. We have a good product and we're just not, the KPIs are not quite matching up and it just doesn't feel right. And the data is showing that something is off. And I bring you in, say, you know what, Yadi, I need you to come assess, me, because it starts with the top down to, the whoever the lowest person is on the totem pole. But I need my company assessed and tell me what you think. What's your process to start saying, okay, I'm gonna come and look at Travis Inc. and begin this journey with him. How's that work?
I think the first step is if your concern is particularly that, for example, KPIs are not being met, the first step there will be, are people familiar with the KPIs? Like, what do they mean to you? Like, you as a manager, as a CEO, will know, like, yeah, these are the KPIs. It's obvious. It's like, it's very clear. And you will assume that it should be common sense for everybody. Now, if you go to the people that work as part of your team, you will do an assessment on trying to identify, okay, so what do they mean to you, these particular KPIs? Do you know which ones are more important? Do you know how your particular role is expected to contribute to this KPI? So that understanding of the bigger vision needs to be clear to everybody, because that happens in some teams and that I work with. That, for example, the one of them, a manager, was getting very frustrated that they were not meeting the deadline, that they were kind of like slacking supposedly. Now, when you go and ask the team or went to the team meetings, there wasn't really that sense of urgency of meeting those particular deadlines. They assumed there was an expectation of like, yeah, we could do the work in the next sprint, or it's fine. There's nobody really telling us like, if we don't do this, we lose the contract, something bad's going to happen. So understanding that there's that common vision from the bottom, that and from the bottom to the top, that they all realize either the sense of urgency of meeting the KPIs, of what are the KPIs and how their roles relate to the KPIs, that's when you kind of start the basis of, okay, then you can see where the lines are breaking. Then you could start, because usually that is the case when it comes to teams that may not be performing, either because they don't realize the urgency or they feel that their role is like, yeah, my little old role doesn't really contribute to that. That's more like, that's above my pay grade.
Right,
So
right.
yeah, so they may not realize that. So it's important, that will be like the first step, and then you kind of start working with improving their team communications, that the vision is clear, defining how their role is really important. No matter that their particular role, how it feeds into that vision, that's very important to them.
So it's established that, hey, we have this goal, we have this thing we have to meet. And then to, for lack of a better term, I'm using the vernacular here, Yadi, is to get buy-in so and to make sure they understand the bigger picture so they can perform their role where they're at.
Yeah, and not only buy-in, it's also kind of like they could even have their own interpretation that also contributes to the bigger picture, that they see like, you know what, my role as a, for example, a developer of this application for Travis Inc. is so important because I know at the end that Travis Inc. does products for users, and that this person is not getting the application right, they could lose the ability to use this wonderful service that we have, so that they could see that there's an end at the on the other side. And it's not that you have convinced them necessarily, is that even beyond you, they will be like, oh, perhaps Travis cares, but I care about the end user that's using this product that we're developing.
So just listening to you, I have to think there is the communication aspect of your, service offering in your career. But it sounds like, and I don't like the assumptions, that you have a very grounded sense of what leadership is to effectively communicate. What's your approach to, or what's your perspective on what a good leader is, Yadi?
It varies, and I have learned actually so much from the military in this regards, because I've seen what great leadership would look like in organizations, like seeing, for example, generals that are not willing to just stay in the office, that they are willing to really walk around, for example, and go ahead and really talk to people in the organization, and instead of just talking, expressing something, they're really there to listen. Or those are great leaders that I have seen. So it depends on. We have this image when it comes to leadership of this person that has great authority and that people are just going to follow because they have this big vision. I don't know, the type style of like Jesus or something like that. But it's more along the lines of it. As long as a leader is able to get a team together, good leaders, from my perspective, they could have a soft style that could be like not necessarily like the most eloquent expressing messages. There are people that really care for their team and they are able to get their people to work together towards common objectives. And not only that, it's that leaders are able to create other leaders. And that's something that I've learned from one of them, an author that I've interviewed from my podcast, David Marquette, who was he wrote the book Turn the Ship Around, and he was expressing that in his book that he learned that it wasn't this fact of being the smartest person in the room with all the answers. It's when he empowered others to make decisions and kind of distribute the decision making for the people that were actually closer to the action, that that's when he got the better results. So it all depends that leaders can create other leaders, basically, is the message, and that you're not need to be the smartest person. A good leader doesn't pretend that they have all the answers. They can trust their team and they can also drive them towards a good direction. So it could be in different styles. It could be in very eloquent, authoritative style, or it could also be like coming from a place of standing in the sidelines and letting other people kind of act as a leader. So as long as they have the best intent for the team and have a common mission and vision, I think that's what makes a good leader.
As you progressed in your career, you wrote the book, Hardcore Soft Skills. I'll have the link to that in the Ask Mike Radio Show post. What was that journey like, taking your combined experience and all the things that you had seen and observed and your education and creating this book for us?
So it was a combination of some of the experience of the things I either have tried and practiced, because the book is very much about a framework that I have developed when I start working with teams and that I have learned through either research or from others or from the podcast guests as well. So I explained the framework, which is that when you come to a team, you start with connecting first, then all the skills that pertain to connecting, like developing relationships, knowing yourselves, knowing the others, then communicating, the aspect of communicating the vision, understanding the communication styles of others as well, then connect, communicate, collaborate, and create, which is where the magic happens, because we need all of these skills to be able to collaborate, like have a good meeting, how to create a framework for prioritizing, team agreement. And then the correct part, which is something kind of very similar to what I've learned either with the military when it comes to events, the hot watch that you do at the end, the after action reviews, but from based on agile frameworks, more doing it in a more iterative way. So those are taking those that framework as a roadmap when you go as a manager into a team or as a team member who's about to enter a team. So I basically developed the framework, but all the skills that are within each one of those C's are things that I have learned from the podcast guests that I have brought. So it's a combination of the advice that they give me. I have a lot of military folks like Navy SEALs that I have spoken with, or people like Harvard educators or other authors, and also the experiences that I have at work, I have had with teams, either of things that did not go right, that I failed miserably at, or that I've seen that I've implemented as well. So it was, I wanted to be able to put it all together in a way, in an easy read that people can just be like, hey, this is a good initial practice of how we can, first of all, exercises that we can do as a team to improving these skills. And it's a constant practice because all these skills require so much practice and effort. And I am terrible at a lot of these, but it's the taking the deliberate action to really practice the so-called soft skills and make them part of our activities as a team and an organization.
Now, I think it's very interesting you just said that because, I always thought that some people had soft skills naturally and you didn't really have to work at it. You're saying there's like work, there's steps to get better at your soft skills. What would some of those steps be?
Yeah, so it depends on the skill, of course. So, for example, when it comes to the skill of communication, there's so much there because, first of all, listening is like such a fascinating skill because we know that some people, you can see that they're natural listeners, they pause, they repeat back. So, in other cases, some of us, we may not be so great and we want to jump into action. And like, the type of listener that I listen to something, but I want to jump into solving your problem, as my husband will say. So, then it is important to take, for example, when it comes to listening, just the simple practice of repeating back to the person what you have heard demonstrates that you're listening and that you're also kind of really reflecting on what they're saying. In other skills, such as public speaking, it's something some people just have it naturally, but others we may need some more practice. And it comes to having the tools, like, for example, hey, if you're clear on your message, if you have a kind of storytelling at the beginning. So those are simple tools and tactics that we can implement to become better communicators. Or another skill, for example, negotiation. That was one that was very, I took a course in Harvard on that, and that was revealing because I used to think that I suck or that a lot of us suck in negotiation, but it turns out that negotiation is not about being like the strongest person in the room, putting your fist on the table. It's more about like, hey, how do we find a good way to collaborate with each other? So there's multiple skills, and it's a matter of learning tools and tactics that we, just like we do with other skills, like learning a language that we practice every day, we go to Duolingo and learn something. We can do the same with this so-called soft skills that are really going to be critical in now in the future of work as AI is taking a lot of those automated activities that we are doing. So the human part, we still can preserve that. And the best way to do so is to really take practice all of these skills.
I'm just curious, have you ever gone to a company or organization and been like, you know what? This place has like most of this right, and they just need a little bit versus, oh my God, we're going to have to start with the basics and practice these soft skills to get good at them. Have you ever had the experience where, you know what? They're doing most or almost all of this right, and they just need a little help. Have you ever had that experience?
I think a lot of what you see is a variety in a lot of organizations. And at times, one thing that I have noticed a lot is, for example, you could have different teams doing things right. But when it comes to connecting the dots of interconnecting with other teams or breaking those silos, that's an important part that I've seen that it's common in organizations. Like you could have an awesome team here of, a project team that is amazing. Yet that project team has to be interdependent with this other like technical team, the network folks that they have to work with. But in order to be better together and really get the project going, they really need to collaborate with each other. And sometimes there's a lot of hesitation from one excellent team to collaborate with the other team. They're like, oh, they're the other. They're not us.
I
So
mean, Yachty, I'm guilty of this. It's family first, Yachty.
I
Plan second, try. And if you're not in my team, I'm like, woohoo.
And it helps and it helps the team to kind of to feel like us against the world, it helps to
Yes,
create that
yes.
cohesion.
So you're saying that I could be better at that, is what you're saying.
I think if our work resolvers, we can all be, because it's the same thing, like we look at the other like it's their fault or these people are not as awesome as us, but oh well. But I think if we start identifying the interconnectedness in an organization, we should be able to improve our own results because we could see like, hey, we cannot this project going because this network people, they just haven't met their deadline. But at the end, it looks bad on us. If we were to develop a good relationship with them, they can we make each other look good. So it's looking at it from the perspective of like, hey, we can keep the family feeling, we can keep the us against the world feeling, but at the same time, we could leverage other teams and kind of break those silos and increase the good and think along the lines of, hey, we can share our best practices with other teams as well, and they could become as awesome as us. So yeah.
What happens then when you've come into a place and you've had them implement this and they take your advice and your counsel and they implement these practices, these hardcore soft skills, and they start seeing results? What's the feedback like when you get that from an organization?
I believe from what implementing, for example, techniques such as how to give more transparency to the work, like when we share the work with others or invite others to see our work, and we have been able, for example, as a team, to prioritize and make the work visible to others. I think it's a realization that they could that there's a need for continual learning. So as a team, we can learn a lot of things, but at the same time, we realize that, hey, I've discovered something else that I can improve. But just that feeling of learning is what's something that becomes very critical when it comes to either doing workshops on soft skills or just essential skills, basically. So it's realizing that the teams really have the answer all along within them. So that's kind of like the coaching job. It's like you help the bring the better, the best out of a team, and realizing you don't have all the answers. For example, I don't have the answers for an organization, but just making them realize that, hey, if we take that humility to learn and we learn together, which is the most effective thing that we can do, because we can all individually like listen to books and podcasts on how to become a better communicator or become better prioritizing. But creating that environment where a team can learn together and you give them the framework, then it just creates magic for that team because they have all the answers. They may
Yeah.
realize, like, you know what, this priority, the way we're doing prioritization is terrible. Let me figure out a better way. And I'm not the one with the answers, but I've created the space to be able to give them a framework and being able to kind of help them come up with the solutions for that.
You've done all this. You've had a very varied career, and it's, I read your career highlights, and I'm like, in some ways, you embody the military experience. You've had to reinvent yourself every so often, or when you want a new challenge. I'm curious, at this stage in your career and your life, Yadi, what's next for you?
So right now, reinventing is one of the things that I mostly admire from the military, because realizing that, hey, you have to move every couple of years, you have to go to a mission that you have no idea what it's going to be, who are the people that you're going to work with. So as long as there's an infrastructure in place, and it's good, but even in those cases, even the military, the personnel comes up and they create things from scratch. So that's some ways that I've always admired. So for myself, I have myself to starting with communications and working with different teams, and I work with like in different, like every couple of years I will be switching teams to go to a different job. So right now my focus is to be able to really focus on the message of educating teams and organizations on soft skills even beyond the military. Like I've talked very recently with university institutions, working with not-for-profits or even people in like the operating, like the manufacturing world, like the
Yeah.
auto industry or others. Because it's the common challenges that we all have of like, how do we work together as a team? So I want to be able to continue spreading that message throughout based on a lot of lessons that I have learned, particularly from the military, in terms of how to apply those in different scenarios. So I want to continue growing hardcore soft skills and just make sure that the education of these soft skills, quote unquote soft, because they're not soft, becomes the normal in across all the organizations.
Well, you've said a couple of things that really stick out to me is that you get to practice these soft skills. You have to work at your communication. You have to develop things. I guess I'm sitting here thinking, and I kind of alluded to it, like, wait a minute. We have the printing press, we have books, internet, Kindles, all these things to, flatten speed. I mean, we can communicate in different languages, on Google if we want to, or different apps. But it still seems like, of all the basic things a human being has to do, that communication is still one of the most difficult things we face. I'm just curious, why do you think that is?
I think it's the fact that even though we have all the tools out there, we have all the tools, as you say, that we could be speaking in different languages and we have the translator right there to kind of do the live translation for
Right.
us. So it's more that even though we're interconnected, quote unquote, there's not really there needs to be the deliberate desire to really connect with the other, to really be like, okay, if I'm, for example, in someplace in an event, that as a safe, measure, I grab my phone and I kind of like, it's like my safe space. I'm gonna be here, looking at my phone and scrolling instead of just like, let me sit here and try to see if I can connect with a new person, which is extremely scary. But at the same time, there needs to be that spirit of curiosity. So curiosity is really something that we need to develop more as humans, realizing that, hey, there's greatness in others. Maybe I'll meet wonderful people today in this event. Maybe not, who knows? But because it takes work. Like, I'd rather just be at home, watching Netflix and not socialize with the world. But I want in what makes the humanity experience more enriching, and there's research to support that what makes life longer and happier is those relationships that we build. They just take work. And I think that's the aspect that we're missing, that we have all the right tools, but it's the comfort of us moving from our sofas and moving to from our desk if we are on site to really meet the other person and develop relationships. I think it's just something that we tend to, our brains need to tend to go into our comfort zones. So we need to fight that urge and really like, nope, I really need to make the effort, and good results come after that.
See, I don't like I like working at home. I like staying at my desk and just working. I get annoyed when someone shows up to talk to me. Like, hey, Travis, how's it going? I'm like, what do you want? I'm busy. And coach me. I mean, I got big shoulders. Are you saying that I need to take more time and actually like talk to people face to face and hear what they gotta say?
Absolutely,
Ooh.
yes.
Oh, Yachty, anything but. Come on, give me something hard to do.
Yeah, and I think what you do here with your podcast and your show, it's a good example of that, because you've seen all the guests that you have on the show, that you foster these conversations with so many diverse people, that it's like, you had guests recently. I'm like, I want to reach out to these people. They have a really interesting story, but they would have been just like, icons on LinkedIn that you just click on and send a message perhaps. But now that you create the environment for people to tell their stories, that you're kind of building a community from there, that you are able to like, huh, I heard this story. Let me reach out. I have something in common with that person. I want to really understand what their experience is, or I have the same problem and I really need to talk to somebody about this. So just having those spaces to foster conversations, or even at work when we have meetings, make them more productive instead of just like us sitting there and going through the thing. It's like, how do we really create the venues that we can
Yeah.
really hear from other people is what's going to be very critical for the work. So you are doing amazing.
So people are watching this show, and I'm going to have the link to your book in the show, the link to your podcast in the show. But how can people reach out to you if, I mean, I don't know if you're still doing like freelance consulting or not, but if they wanted to talk to you about consulting, how do they go about interfacing with you, Yadi?
So they can go to my website, yadicaro.com, is YADICARO.com. And I have there the way to reach out to me, and also the episodes to my podcast and the link to the book. And I'm also on LinkedIn, so I'm very happy to reach out to every single person that I connect with. I reach out myself, not a robot, to make a connection there. So I look forward to hear from your listeners.
Well, it's just been a very interesting conversation because, again, for me, we're so tech heavy, and I can, get on AI and craft something, but it takes me back to this same, dare I say, simple premise where if I just sit with somebody and listen to what they have to say, we can get true like synergy and do some amazing things together. And for a lot of military veterans, I'm sure you've seen they work in the squad, they have their platoon, and then they get out into the civilian world, and it's hard to find that again and learn how to communicate again. So I think it's very relevant to what we're trying to do here. So I just want to thank you for your time on a Friday coming and talking with me.
Thank you for the opportunity, Travis, and I really enjoy what you do in your show, and I think your mission is so important. And thank you again for inviting me to your show.
There you have it, folks. Communication is a basic human thing that we have to do, and Yadi can help you improve that and get some amazing results. Thank you again for coming on. And as we stay here in Oscar Mike Radio, we are Mission in Flight. We'll see you next time.
Every generation, every sacrifice, our nation's service members have stood up for our freedom, our families, and our future. Now it's our turn to stand up for them. This year, you can honor their service in a deeply personal way by sponsoring a $17 Veterans Wreath. Each wreath is more than a symbol. It's a heartfelt tribute to the heroes who served and to the families who carry their legacy. Visit wreathsacrossamerica.org to sponsor a wreath today. This isn't just a wreath. It's a personal gift to an American hero.
Thank you for listening and watching Oscar Mike Radio, where our active duty service members and veterans are in action and the mission is in flight. Oscar Mike Radio is an Oversized Load Co-Sinister-1 production. If you are a veteran or know a veteran who needs help, please dial 988 and press 1 for the Veterans Crisis Line.